the difference between the Mets being a team that maybe gets to where they were last year as opposed to getting past where they were last year and getting to the World Series is going to be contributions from these younger guys. I mean, you got it from Mark Vientos last year. You hope that Francisco Alvarez does it. And then you need these starting pitchers to be healthy and really good. So those are the two things. You need Senga. Give me Senga, Manaea, Peterson pitching really, really well going into the postseason and healthy. And, you know, obviously Clay Holmes has been pretty good for them as well. But those guys I trust the most. You get those guys going in the right direction, end of the season, healthy, and then just give me one of these. Give me Francisco Alvarez, Vientos, Beatty, one of these guys smacking the baseball, and then I love our chances.
All right. So their starting five is pretty set up right now. This should have been their starting five, I believe, coming out of spring training. And now whether or not you're going to get any of these other starters back for either a spot start or a spot in the bullpen. That's the other thing. You remember Tylor Megill was a bullpen arm at one point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there are options for David Stearns is what I'm saying. But he definitely has to find, an offensive outfielder. And I don't know if that's Jesse Winker, if that's what they're thinking, or if they're going to go all in for somebody else that could be available that could be an offensive threat. Because you can never have, as we found out in this league, like when you think about the Dodgers lineup when it's fully healthy, 1 through 9, I mean, you know, the bottom of that lineup was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And that's what you want the Mets' bottom of the lineup to be. And, you know, if Alvarez is going to be back and he's going to do what he's going to do, he's going to hit that towards the bottom of the lineup. But, again, I just think that, you know, for me, eventually, either Vientos has got to get going here, and if Alvarez is with him, you know, the only really hole you have, if it's not those two guys, then it's Taylor in center field.
Really,
I'm like, everybody else should be okay. I mean, like, offensively, they should be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just now that you have most of the team healthy outside of Jesse Winker, you feel like, yeah, there's not a lot of holes on this team, and that's why they were projected to be at the top of the division and back into the postseason. So, yeah, it's just, this is why I'm really, like, what is David Stearns, even though his press conference, you can't really tell from general managers' press conferences, but, I mean, if I had to make a decision and project into the future from what he said of who's going to make a big deal or not, I would say no, probably not from
he may feel like the guys that he has on the injured list may be able to refortify or fortify the team moving forward. I mean, that would be interesting. That would be really interesting. I kind of feel like they have to do something just to pacify us as a fan base. Like, well, don't you feel like Brian Cashman's definitely got to do something? I mean, after watching this last night, and I can understand why John Boy and John Boy Media and those guys were all over Aaron Boone for, you know, the intensity aspect of the Yankees. And when you watch this last night, and I know that, you know, Aaron Boone got thrown out, and I know that he was arguing balls and strikes, and rightfully so, by the way.
Yeah.
He wasn't wrong. But it's just that, you know, that's a game, like if you're a fan watching your team play that way in the field, it's like,
well, I mean, also coming off the fact that, you know, the Dodgers were going to beat the Yankees in the World Series no matter what. But
why? Because they made them throw the ball.
Yeah.
Or they made them field the ball.
But that game five is still sticking in the minds of Yankee fans, where it was like, you know, we had an opportunity to get that to game six, and we just, Aaron Judge drops the ball, obviously play between Cole and Rizzo, and it's like, now you come back this season, and you're just, the left side of the infield is a sieve, and you have too many of these games where you feel like if you actually were a competent defensive team, you could not be four games back in the division.
And, of course, Ben Rice is over at first base, and the ball finds him.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they got guys playing out of position.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they got Jazz Chisholm playing out of position. Well, they got Ben Rice playing out of position. I mean, it just doesn't, yeah. I mean, there has to be a real change in this team at the deadline if they expect to get back to where they were last year. Well, right now, I mean, they're not even close to it because they're four games back of the Blue Jays.
And watching the game last night, so the Blue Jays are running all over the base pass. They're diving in head first. I mean, I get the kind of viewpoint that certain Yankee fans would have about the intensity of your team. When you're watching the other team that you're playing against and you're trying to overcome who have overcome you, diving into, you know, headfirst into bases, making all the defensive plays, coming up with the big hits. I mean, that is a very frustrating and a very eye-opening series. Once again, this is the second series now in a row against the Toronto Blue Jays up there in Toronto, where they really haven't had a sniff.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like the Blue Jays are in a position where, like, they can kind of sense that the Yankees are just sort of teetering there, and they just want to push them down and kind of bury them if they can. And it feels like maybe they want it a little bit more right now. I'm Aaron Boone, I'm saying, well, how could you say that when you're not around the team? Like, he was yelling back at John Boy, I don't care what these guys say in a post-game conference. You know, I know how much these guys care, and you can't judge it by what you're watching. But then again, when you watch it, you're like, wow. I mean, this Blue Jays team is not messing around. They've got one of the best home records in baseball, and that's for a reason.
You could just see in their dugout. I mean, I know exactly. The dugout looks confident. Their dugout, like, you remember Guerrero said, I'll never play for the Yankees.
Yeah.
I hate the Yankees. It's, right. It's kind of like the guy up in Toronto.
Right. Until
basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Masai Ujiri.
That's right. Yeah. And
Vladimir, what is it about Toronto hating New York?
Yeah. But then again, Vladimir Guerrero backtracked on that when he was going for his contract. It was talking about
he might the Yankees.
Hit, right. Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know how much he hates the Yankees or wouldn't play for the Yankees. And when he needed them for leverage, he kind of, you know, I didn't really mean that. But yeah. And he got his contract. So good for him. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, you said it the other day, like the New York teams are hated by everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. unless you're a fan of them, the Knicks became the most hated team in the NBA. The Yankees have always been that team, either love them or hate them. And that's what you get, especially teams in the AL East that have been watching the Yankees dominate for so long. Yeah. I mean, the Blue Jays have had minimal success compared to the Yankees. A lot of talk, a lot of like prospects, a lot of this team's the next team on the rise, and have never been able to do it. Well, they're in the midst of doing it right now.
They are right in the middle of it. And, you know, by watching these games, they are head and shoulders above the Yankees. I mean, it's not even close at the moment.
No, it feels like that. I mean, it feels like they are the Astros to the Yankees right now. That's what it felt like in this series.
Where would you put the Yanks right now in the American League?
Well, obviously, they're not as good as the Blue Jays. They're not as good as the Tigers, who have had their struggles recently. But still, Houston, you always got to give respect to Houston. So, I mean, I they're 4-5 range in the American
amazing.
League.
Which is amazing.
I mean, do you disagree? Agree?
Well, I agree with you a bit. But at the beginning of the year, they got off to a good start. Everything was playing well. And we all thought, and I'm probably guilty of this too, but, you know, we always remind people it is a 162-game season and a lot of things can happen. We all thought that the American League was going to be a cakewalk.
Well, it was last year. We had the evidence to prove that. It's not this year. The Astros are back to being a dominant force. You got a team in the division who's actually meeting expectations and actually exceeding expectations in the Blue Jays. And you got a Tigers team that was the best team in baseball until they hit this little bit of a skid and have the best pitcher in baseball in Skubal. So, yeah, I mean, there's no cakewalk anymore.
No.
Not at all. It was real easy to get to the World Series for the Yankees. They still had to win the series. They did. But this year's you know what? Different kettle of fish.
What?
It's a whole different kettle of fish this year. You've heard that before, right?
Hey, I've heard kettle of fish, yeah.
A whole different kettle of fish.
Okay.
You know what we got here?
What do we got here now?
We got a horse of a different color.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Not a cakewalk.
Not a cakewalk. No, 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 no.
And I think the Yankee fan knows that. And the pressure mounting on Aaron Boone, mounting on Brian Cashman. Who'll probably just get a contract extension at the end of the year for another 50 years. Till you die, contract extension. The Yankee fans, the minds will be blown.
He'll do something. He'll do something. He always does. You know that. I know that. And it's probably going to be a big thing. Whatever it is, it's going to be big. You can feel it.
You can feel it in your bones.
Yeah, because, you know, now 5 games dropping. They got to stop. They got to stop the drop. They got to re-kind of, you know, energize the baseball team. And, you know, I could see a couple moves being made in order to try to do that, you know, and it will have a profound effect on the dugout, no question, especially if they go out and get the guys that, you know, we believe that they're going after.
Well, hopefully they figure it out this weekend because they play the Phillies, and we know the Mets and the Phillies did a battle for the top spot in the NL East.
Earlier today, the New York Mets defeated the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. In fact, it went final in the last 10 minutes. Edwin Diaz recorded a four-out save. Pete Alonso hit a bomb. Francisco Lindor broke out of his massive slump with a couple of base hits and a couple of RBIs. But in the eighth inning, when Edwin Diaz was called upon to get a four-out save, he was facing Luis Renjifo, who the Mets just couldn't get out in this series. I mean, he was unbelievable.
He really didn't get him out in the eighth inning either.
No, he did not. Well, he did, but he didn't.
He did. He
because
definitely did not.
Luis Renjifo ended up striking out. There were three strikes called on Luis Renjifo. He didn't actually swing his bat in the course of that at-bat. Like, there were three called strikes. There were three balls. That was it. So he didn't swing his bat. Edwin Diaz didn't throw anything resembling a strike one time.
No.
Three called strikes on Luis Renjifo, including the final one, were well out of the strike zone. And so that, of course, pissed off whoever the interim manager is of the Anaheim Angels. And guess what? Not my problem. Not your problem. But the Mets did get a break from the calls that were being made in the eighth inning. And the Mets won. They were able to hold on. They had a 6-1 lead. Things got a little dicey. Mike Trout came up as the tying run. Renjifo struck out on a pitch that was 10 feet outside.
Right. And that were two big, there were two on at that point.
Yeah.
So that would have loaded the bases if he would have walked them.
Too bad. Yeah, Eric Bachus, the home plate umpire, checks in the mail. No, I'll send it to you tomorrow.
And then Edwin Diaz comes out the top of the ninth. He drills Chris Taylor in the head.
You're welcome, Yankee fans.
It's like, geez.
Yeah, Edwin was not his sharpest, but he was able to get the outs when he needed to.
That's right. Got a save.
He got a save, and the Mets got a win. I love that Mendy went to him for a four-out save. The Mets have an off day tomorrow, so it's kind of one of those things where you just empty it all out, leave it all out there, get a victory, and now you head out to the West Coast. But the Mets, who started the second half of the year in such a kind of depressing way with the way they lost on Friday and even the way they lost on Saturday, to their credit, they responded.
Right.
They win four straight games against Cincinnati and now the Angels. And for anyone who says the Angels suck, that doesn't count. The Angels just won a series against the Phillies. It's baseball. It's what's right in front of you. So really good work. And I think the most encouraging thing from the Met victory today this afternoon against the Angels was obviously Francisco Lindor, because Lindor has been going through a massive, massive batting slump. There's a lot of thought that he's injured. I don't honestly think that's the case. I think it's just a guy slumping. And we've seen this from Lindor, Teague. Like, usually it happens in April.
Right.
He has these massive, massive batting slumps, and sometimes it only takes one hit to get out of it. He had a few hits in this game. He drove in a couple of runs. And hopefully, as they head west, he'll get going. And the other guy that broke out of it was Pete, because Pete's also very quietly been slumping, and he had a massive three-run home run that he pimped. And so you saw the bats break out in this game, even though they did nothing in the final five innings offensively. But they broke out early. They jumped on a bullpen day from the Angels. And you have to feel good if you're a Met fan. Four straight wins. First time they've had a four-game winning streak in a while. And it feels good.
Right. You get a sweep. Makes you feel good. Makes you forget the troubles that led into this series. But it's also, I mean, let's call it what it is. It's the Angels. And so,
what does that mean? Just, what does that mean? They're a 500 team. They're a baseball team.
Yeah, they're not that good, though.
Who cares?
I'm just saying. Just
I don't care if they're a minor league team. You just got to win. They all count the same. Look, we all play the same schedule nowadays, other than the three extra games the Mets have to play against the Yankees. The Phillies, who the Mets are now officially tied with, that'll be broken tonight when the Phillies take on the Red Sox. They had to play the Angels. They lost to the Angels. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Angels.
Yeah. I mean, look at Detroit. Detroit, what they lost again today.
They've been struggling.
They got swept by Pittsburgh?
Yes. I think so, yeah. They've been really, really struggling. All of a sudden, you look at the standings in the American League Central. Not that that's getting tight, but in the American League, they're going to fall behind Houston and Toronto or maybe the Yankees for that number one seed. They're 60-43. The Blue Jays are 59-42. The Astros are 59-42. So I think we see a lot of teams struggle at different points, but good job by the Mets. He's taking care of business because now they got a challenge on their hands. Let's go, Mets! Yeah, I like that. That fires me up. They're going to San Francisco. I know the Giants are struggling, but they got to deal with Logan Webb and Robbie Ray. But the Mets are straightening themselves out. They get a nice little victory. Lindor gets a hit. And the other thing I got to say about the Mets before we get to your calls, and it's kind of picked up over the last few days, the insanity of this. The Mets are drawing massive crowds every single night. Now, we knew the attendance would be better Remember when Steve Cohen called the fans out
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, I spent a lot of money.
Yeah, you spend money too.
Right.
And give they were all happy customers.
That's right. And I figured the Mets would draw better, and they were drawing better. No doubt about it. But they are now on a streak where they've had 10 consecutive crowds greater than 40,000. And you can't just say, well, they played the Yankees in the middle of it. It was David Wright Day. What about today? It's a Wednesday afternoon in July against the Angels, and don't tell me Mike Trout's people going to see him.
I mean, maybe.
Stop. Stop it.
This is your star that you know on the opposing team.
This streak started against the Brewers. They have reached 41,000, or I should say 40,000 or more in 10 straight games, and I want to give you a little factoid to back up the insanity of this. How many times last season did the Mets draw 40,000 people during the regular season?
Five.
The answer is eight.
That's a good guess.
Close.
Eight times. Just knew it wasn't a lot.
Was not a lot. Eight times. Their 40-plus thousand crowd today is the 27th of the season. They have almost doubled the figure. And when you look at their schedule the rest of the way, there's no reason to believe they're not going to continue to do it. The Mets are averaging the greatest amount of people that they have ever had at Citi Field outside of year number one, which was, hey, the novelty of a new stadium. Like, their average attendance is better than any year they've ever had at Citi Field outside of year one. And I have to admit, I'm kind of surprised how good it's been. I thought it was going to be good.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be historically good.
Yeah, you're talking about that streak, and it goes back to the Milwaukee series.
Yes. That's when it began, at 40,000 or more.
Right, but the only reason it didn't go back into the Atlanta series, it was the last game of that four-game Atlanta series, that was the first one over 40 of this latest iteration where they had 42,000. Don't forget, Tuesday's game was postponed.
Yes, that's right. They had
a
split
doubleheader.
Yep.
But in the doubleheader, it was 36 the first game and
that's
42
right.
the second.
So that's almost like, don't count that one.
Exactly. You almost can't count it.
The crowds have been massive, and I think it's a testament to us as Met fans. We've answered the call. Like, right. Not that we're front runners, but people kind of are. Like, if you're going to spend your hard-earned money, you want to feel like you're spending it on something that's worth it. Mm. And so Met fans have certainly responded to the success from last year, the success early this season, the signing of Juan Soto. Like, add it all together, and you got the Mets putting up 40K. Now, for the Yankee fans listening, that's not big news for you.
Right,
you get 40,000 every night. But for the Mets, who drew so badly last year, like, that was a story around here for a while, how bad their attendance was. People are packing the building. I mean, this was a Wednesday afternoon in July, and 41,000 people went out there to see Mets Angels. So, good job by the people. But here's what this all means, Steve. What this means is...
Was this mid-July, 23rd?
July 23rd is not mid-July anymore.
Yeah,
it's late July.
It is. Well, I mean...
It's on the precipice of late July.
Maybe it's the day? No, that was the Yankees. That was the Subway Series, that's why.
What are you talking about?
I was just looking at them last year at this time in July.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Other than the Yankees series, like, think about it. They had eight crowds of 40,000 or more.
Right.
Four of them are Yankees, Mets, and opening day. And then the right. rest of it was probably the final weekend of the year against the Phillies.
So July 25th, which is Thursday last year of 2024, 34,000.
Yeah.
And that was a Braves series.
That's right. You see the difference. But now that we've responded, Steve, so here's the way things went, Mr. Steve Cohen. You spent the money. Thank you. Like, seriously, thank you. You bought us Juan Soto. Thank you very much. You brought back Pete Alonso. Thank you. Like, we appreciate that. And then you said, you guys show up. And we did. Like, in a way that you probably didn't even expect. Now it's your turn again. You threw the basketball to us. We're going to throw it back to you. The trade deadline's in 7 days. Money is no object, right, Steve? Money is no object, right, Steve? I know you're over the tax.
Okay, but who do you want?
That's not even the point. The point is money shouldn't be a factor. Mm. That's my only point, because I've got varying degrees on what player I want, who I want to go after, prospects matter. But all I'm saying is just a general statement. You spent money and said, go to the ballpark. We went to the ballpark. 40,000 every night. Thank you, sir. Now it's your turn again.
Right.
Money is no object. That's all I'm saying. That's it. And I have faith. This isn't like one of those Wilpon warnings. Like, I don't believe in. I believe in Steve. Steve will do it. I'm just reminding him. He's in the car right now with Alex. They're driving home. He's very happy about another victory. I'm happy, too. And I'm just reminding him. We did our job, now you do your job again.
Then they're being driven home, I would assume. I don't think they're actually doing the driving.
You don't think Steve drives?
No shot. You think he drives to Citi Field in the traffic?
Maybe.
They're billionaires.
You think Alex drives them?
No. What is this, Evan driving everybody around Barcelona?
They're being driven. Like, his wife drives them, right?
Why would she want to drive? Why would I? If I was rich,
she's,
I would.
She's a go-getter. It's like, she gets stuff done.
Yeah, but the traffic sucks around here. Why would you want to deal with that?
I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you an example, because you get this confused a lot with money. Tiki Barber played in the NFL.
He did.
He did pretty well.
I remember that, yes.
Now, unfortunately for Tiki, if he would have played it 20 years later, he would have done even better, even though he's a running back, so maybe not.
I'd probably still be making about the same.
That's a good point. Maybe it's not a great example.
No, you're right.
But let's say Tiki never played football. He actually loved basketball, and he made the NBA. He was like Terrell Brandon because he wasn't that tall. I brought that up. I didn't say Muggsy Bogues. That'd
Chris
be insulting.
Paul is not that tall, is he? He's 6 feet.
He's 6 feet, man. Yeah. Terrell Brandon was like 5'10". But you made the NBA and you're making $35 million a year. Okay? Doing well. Would you stop driving just because you had a lot of money?
Nope.
Exactly.
I love driving.
Me too.
I love being in control.
Bingo. So just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you stop doing things. Like, if I won the lottery and all of a sudden I had like billions of dollars, or one day the architect got drunk and he gave me a brand new contract that paid me $30 million a year.
Wow.
He's like, Evan, we love you.
Wow. If you're making 30, what am I making?
Well, he only got drunk that one night, so I'm the only one overpaid. I would still drive. Like, sometimes even though you make a lot of money, it doesn't change what you like to do. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, let's get to your calls. 888-808-1019. Jeff is in New Haven, Connecticut. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Evan Tiki, hope you guys are doing good.
Doing well. What's
good,
up,
man? What's up?
So I've been waiting to make this phone call for 2 weeks, waiting for Evan to get back from Europe. Hope you had a great time.
Thank you.
You inadvertently, Evan, ruined one of my early fatherhood memories.
What'd I do?
I have two twin-year-old daughters at home, and you know, they're in that extremely active stage. They're getting into sports. And me and my wife recently bought them these giant bouncy balls, and they love them. They're playing with them all the time. And the other day, one of them starts to dribble it, and dribbling it. And my wife goes, dribble, dribble, dribble. And in my excitement, I should be like, yeah. But in my head, I'm hearing Evan Roberts going, fat, 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 fat. So I want to thank you for that, Evan, for, being in the back of my mind as one of my girls is playing in the living room.
Jeff, at least you didn't say it out loud.
Yeah, that would have been a problem.
Because I might have said it out loud.
All of a sudden, you started screaming.
Dribble, dribble, dribble.
Fat, fat, fat. Yeah, I'm sorry for that. That was a very emotional day. That was a very emotional day. But I'm glad that you were able to enjoy the moments with your kids.
By the way, speaking of Evan's vacation, this has been weighing on my brain for the last couple of days. I just have to ask you this, Evan. You come back, you're sporting this beautiful tan. You look great. You got a maple syrupy brown kind of color going to you.
Thank you.
There's just one problem. Your legs look like sheets of paper. Did you wear pants over there? Your legs are as pale as your behind, and your face and arms are tanned.
That doesn't make any sense, because I was in shorts 100% of the time.
Would you agree, though, that your legs are quite white?
My legs have always been very pasty white, like always. And I'm not a tanning kind of guy. I got to protect myself from the sun kind of guy. Because, you know, I'll drop.
I should have just come to work.
So, like, I lather up really big with the suntan.
Lather up, not blather up.
Well, what did I say?
You said blather up.
Lather, blather, same thing. On major, major lotion to protect myself from the sun. Or sunscreen, I think, is the official name.
You still get sun.
I know.
Like, even if you put 60 on, you're still going to get
sun. So why are my legs pasty white and yet the rest of my body got, you know, golden brown?
It's because of the golden thong.
Hey now.
Maybe that's the reason.
You know, you've heard this expression a long time. You know, you're either hurt or you're injured. You know, which one is it? Obviously, if you're injured, you really can't play. If you're hurt, you can kind of grind through it and kind of see where you're at. I don't know what the story is with Lindor, but, I mean, you got to start wondering what's the option here in terms of maybe just giving him a little bit of time off his feet. I mean, he's in an 0-for-19 funk in his last 0-for-19. Hard. His last 15 days, he's batting .136. And the last 30 days, basically coinciding with the injury, hitting .190. Remember, get off to a good start. Now, a little deceiving because April was awesome, the exact opposite of what he usually does. But May was mid 250-ish, which is fine. He tailed down in June, and July has been an absolute disaster. And not even to morph into this. Hoff, I need your opinion. I just need an answer. I'm going to set this up. Maybe because it happened with David Wright. Maybe because we've had so many different Francisco Lindor conversations. Francisco Lindor retires today. Because think about the conversations we've had about Francisco Lindor, especially with me on this station and on the show. Lindor retires tonight. Mets retire his number?
Yeah, of course.
Wow, there's no chance they would do that.
Why?
Why would they?
Well, why wouldn't they?
Well, I just don't think that he's done enough.
You're saying today, but here's the thing. He's got at least seven more years.
I understand.
He's going to put up so many numbers that are just stupid. I mean, he's going to be the best shortstop ever to play the game for the Mets.
Yep.
He's going to have, again, you want to go down through just historically what the Mets are doing now. They're starting to highlight a lot of players.
Which is great.
Which
you
is fantastic.
What I said about the right stuff.
Lindor is no doubt going to have his number retired.
But again, I think I'm with you. Oh, I'm definitely with you on like the totality of his Mets career. A lot of baseball to go. I'm not turning this into
Right now, he's a Hall of Famer.
Well, yeah, I mean, either way, but I mean, think about this. I don't think, and again, you can't get separation from the reality of the fact that there's a lot of baseball to go. But I would ask myself, that's why I asked you, you're an actual Mets fan, like, and I respect your opinion. I don't think he's done enough, like, now. I just wanted your first answer. Because he's in a real funk. I do think he's banged up. I do think the toe has obviously betrayed him here. He's obviously a whole hell of a lot better than this. And that's why I'm thinking maybe you sit him down for a couple of days. Because if you run him out there every day and it's just not Lindor, what are you really doing? Although I do respect his ability to grind and keep playing. But as great as he was, like last year was the great year for him. And we've had so many different discussions about his start to the Mets career. But I think there's two different answers. If he stepped away from the game today, the answer is no. For me. As he continues to play, I think the answer becomes a definite yes. I'm just curious.
Can I ask you a question, though? Do you think that he's a Hall of Famer if he stepped away today?
If he stepped away today, I do want to take a quick look at one number here.
I'm pretty sure he's up there, or I think he surpassed the most home runs.
My answer would be no.
I think he's the most home runs by a shortstop.
I did see that. He's got a ton. I mean, but he's got, here's the problem, Hoff. Again, if we're going to look at benchmarks and now this obviously includes the Guardians, but
yeah,
if you're looking at benchmarks, he's got 1,590 hits and 272. Not at 1,590. That's all I'm saying.
As a shortstop, he may be the best shortstop ever that we've ever seen universally. What he does speed-wise, power-wise, defensively, he may be the best shortstop we've ever seen, especially right now in today's game. So I understand that, like, he doesn't do enough for certain people, but to me, he's done everything that you could ask for more. I know maybe he hasn't won a World Series, but that doesn't define you as a Hall of Famer. And again, he's got so many more years to go, which is why he's a no doubt about it.
No, I was just thinking, well, first of all, I mean, again,
and which is the point of, too, why they would retire his number. How are you going to retire some? How are you going to send somebody to the Hall of Fame and not retire his number?
Well, if most of the production was done with a different team, that's the short answer. But again, I'm not trying to turn that into this. I'm really not. I just find it interesting because, you know, with the right stuff on the heels of that. Now, did you just say that he is the greatest shortstop ever? You didn't just say that.
Universally could be.
What do you mean universally?
Oh, defensively and offensively.
What?
Yeah.
Stop.
Speed-wise, power-wise.
What?
Yeah. Yes.
Come
we just
on,
talked
man.
About his home run power. I think he's the I'm pretty sure, if not, or he's going to pass
he
it
is.
Soon.
I saw that stat a couple weeks ago, ago.
What are we laughing at? Like,
there's other elements of the game than just power.
I totally understand that.
He's not the greatest shortstop. I mean, that's
Looney Field. As I said, universally. I'm going to fight back with you. Universally, he's the best shortstop ever. Power-wise, defensively, speed-wise.
There's other elements
of the games. I know he's not Ozzie Smith and playing like Ozzie Smith, but he has that element to the game.
Was he Robin Yount, who has 3,000 hits? Was he Derek Jeter? Again, or is it 312? He's got 3,500 hits.
Don't talk to me about Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was in an element. You want to talk about Derek Jeter? I'll tell you about Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter is the most overrated shortstop of all time.
What's that?
Derek Jeter is the most overrated shortstop of all time. And the reason why is because he's sitting there with a Yankees team where he was able to play 20 plus years surrounded by the best players of all time. Francisco Lindor, again, tell me the year that Derek Jeter was able to put up the speed numbers and the power numbers that Francisco Lindor did. Did he ever do that?
I am not going to compare Jeter and Lindor on the air.
I know you won't.
I'll do this at a bar.
That's fine. But that's what we do here, don't we? We're at a bar.
You know
we're
what?
Actually hanging with the boys.
A bartender, may I have a...
How many more years left is Francisco Lindor's career?
Hold on. I got to get a drink if we're going to do this. Hold on. Bartender, sir, may I have
what
a...
What are we getting, a whiskey?
Johnny Black on the rocks, please. Okay. I might need a double if we're going to have an
extra I want an old-fashioned.
Is that your... Okay.
I'm going to have an old-fashioned.
We know Sal here. He'd be banging back his surfside. If Sally was here. All right, so... I will engage for a moment. Wow. You're right. It is what we do. Who the hell knows where the turns come? I think it's loony, Phil. I just need you to pop up Lindor stats just for a minute. I will engage. I think this is honestly insane, but so insane that I actually do want to probe deeply into this. All right. So you asked me the year that Derek, you know, kind of either replicated with the speed, however you framed it. Now, just out of curiosity, let's start with a geeky number. What was Lindor's highest WAR in a single season?
Oh, yeah, that God, this is what you want to do. You want to listen, we're going to have a stat that was just created about 7 years ago.
No, it wasn't. Babe Ruth has WAR, man.
I know, but they're going back in history because they want to try to make it look good. All right, the highest WAR by Francisco
Just
Lindor.
In a single, just out of curiosity, just a launching point here.
7.3,
and that was in 2018. Okay. So I've got it up, too. Just make sure there's nothing misrepresented.
Oh,
and
my
eight.
God.
I'm just teasing. I'm just messing around. So Derek's high is 8. Now, what's the most bases that he ever stole?
Most bases he ever stole.
35?
31, 29.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jeter in 98, that was a good season, at the age of a young 24, hit 324 and stole 30 bases, huh?
Good for him. How many home runs he hit that year?
19. He batted first, dude.
But Lindor last year batted 19, and he had batted first last year and had 33 home runs.
Did he hit 324?
He batted 273, 29 stolen bases. Again, I'm talking about universal. Maybe you missed that part.
I don't know what you mean by universal. Why do you keep saying universal? What does that mean? All time?
All-encompassing numbers. It's not just about, like, I could say that Pete Alonso is the best power-hitting first baseman as a New York Met, right?
Yeah.
He's hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that what Lindor does overall, everything, he does everything well. So I think overall, he does everything better than any other shortstop. You can isolate certain shortstops and say, oh, this is the best defensive shortstop of all time. No doubt about it. Maybe Lindor doesn't surpass him of that, but he's right there neck and neck. He's power-wise, best ever. Speed-wise, he's definitely up there. He's got over 200 stolen bases.
Are we not counting A-Rod, just for clarity? Bartender, may I have another shot here, please? Thank you, buddy. Are we not counting Alex Rodriguez?
No, he's not. Because
of the steroids?
Because of his actual numbers. His power-wise, he went to third base.
Are we counting
Nomar? He counted to who?
Nomar? Who, with 350, 360? Are we not counting these guys?
Alex Rodriguez moved to third base. So
yeah,
you can't
after,
count
after
his
10 years.
Right, okay, but so his numbers weren't...
Well, that's why I ask you, so no way, Rod.
You can't because he moved to third base. Kyle Ripken moved to third base. Francisco Lindor's a shortstop.
Okay.
End of story.
What about Alan Trammell?
Again.
Are we going to count him?
What did he do?
Number one, he won an MVP. Number two, he won a World Series, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Last year, Lindor got robbed because Shohei Ohtani does two things, which he only did one of them last year, which was offense.
Yeah, I think that this is nuts. I don't know how else to say it. I appreciate the pushback.
Yeah, but BT, you're also not understanding the fact that what Francisco Lindor does.
No, I understand. I just don't agree.
That's not at the all-time level.
Come on, huh? The all-time
you
level.
You think that Alex Rodriguez is a better shortstop defensively than Francisco Lindor?
Now, before you jump on me, let me answer. The answer is probably no.
Okay.
Hold on. Probably no. But all the other elements are so far in favor of A-Rod. The defensive advantage that Lindor does probably have, although young A-Rod at short was insane, but just to keep this thing moving, is not nearly enough to elevate him over A-Rod, who blasted him in every other statistical category.
Crazy Yankee seasons, that was all third base.
Do you remember what he did with the Rangers, dude?
I remember with the Rangers. He signed a huge contract.
Hold on. And then he said, get me out of here. Alex, yeah. I mean, I... I need another shot, sir. Alex Rodriguez, as a shortstop, that's, I get it, hit 358.
That's great.
Oh, wait. You're talking about,
BT.
Hold on 42 home runs.
But BT, you're talking.
51,
but hold on, 57. Hold on. Let me stop you right there. Stop with the batting average, because we've actually numbed down batting average so much. We know that batting average means nothing, and you want to know why it means nothing, is because the game has completely changed, where we can't even get guys to bat 300 now.
Well, I could give you OPS. I just went for that. How about 51 home runs? How about 149 RBIs? How about 53 home runs? How about 57? As a shortstop.
Again, great. Power numbers were amazing. Can't sniff what he could do on the field. Can't sniff what he does defensively. I don't care that he doesn't get a gold glove. That's just because people are idiots and don't recognize. Listen, Anthony Volpe has won a gold glove before. The guy can't play shortstop. But we're going to sit there and talk about, oh, Francisco Lindor, he hasn't won a gold glove.
Look, I got something for you here.
Go for it.
I don't know the answer, so I might not have some. I might have something
I don't
for
know
me.
The answers, period.
I just did the most basic, you're crazy, the most basic search. Now, it doesn't mean that it's right. But greatest shortstops of all time.
Sure.
I think that might be an interesting starting point. Maybe get us on an interesting road.
I think we're already there.
Yeah, well, true. Here's what pops up, man. You ready? I'm just going to blast through names because we don't have time to debate each one. Jeter, no water. Trammell, Ripken. I actually think Ripken's a little bit overrated. I've always said that. Honus Wagner, Ozzie Smith, A-Rod, Robin Yount, Barry Larkin, Ernie Banks, and then some old names I won't bore you with. No more. Lindor's here. Let me tell you, they put him out there.
I love Ozzie Smith. You can't tell me that Ozzie Smith is even remotely close to Francisco Lindor offensively.
I'm not going to waste your time on that.
Yeah.
There's no way.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, Lindor does everything well.
I think Barry Larkin's better than Lindor.
No, he's not.
Oh, stop.
No, he's not. No, because his batting average is better. I can't buy into that.
He's got 9 silver sluggers, dude.
Okay.
He's got a championship.
Well, but the championship is arbitrary.
But he wasn't the pinch hitter. He was the main player on the team when they won the championship.
The teams that he was built around were amazing. Was he with part of Big Red?
He was the best player on the team.
With Big Red Machine?
Barry Larkin? Big Red Machine's 1975, 1974.
Right.
Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez. I mean, you're talking about
Larkin. I remember
Larkin.
The 90s.
Yeah, I mean, you missed it by 2 decades. All right, bartender, cut him off. Cut him off. No more for him. Cut him off. 888. Oh, my goodness. I'm sure this conversation will continue during the break. Lucky me, as he will walk in and feed me more Lindor stuff. I'm not Lindor hating. I'm not. But what have I got? First up, time for the meat of the order for the Yankees yesterday. And Yankees didn't crank out a ton of runs or have a lot of offense yesterday, but the middle of the order actually did most of the damage. Judge obviously went deep, and that was a bomb the other way. Like, the way he hits balls the other way, it looks like somebody pulled it. It's amazing how far and just the explosion he goes the other way. But Judge with the home run. Stanton, 3 hits. Jazz, a couple of hits as well. Goldschmidt, he had 1 hit, so Goldie's down to 289. And obviously Judge, 352 on the season. But the meat of the order, again, didn't go nuts, but did just enough. And Stroman was gutsy. Good job by Stroman. So when you're looking for the meat for your order, choose Boar's Head. Committed to craft since 1905. I'll get back to these calls on the Yankees and the Mets and the trade deadline urgencies. And to me, this is an absolute period of evaluation for David Stearns. Now, Mark in Oceanside, big fans, you know, the show, the station, calls a ton. I think he's a smart guy. I do think he's a little bit unfair to David. He gave him a C-. So actually C-/D, which I just don't think is fair because I don't think it's commensurate with the wins. I mean, like, he hasn't been perfect, and we ran down the moves here, but the Manaea move enabled them to be a playoff team a year ago. And I would probably say more like a B-C+, slightly higher. B-C+. Hoff, real quick, where would you put Stearns? At this point, we know the moves. We know what you need him to do, what you want him to do. Thus far, grade-wise on Stearns.
I mean, it's incomplete, but like, we're talking about the time he's been here. I give him a B+. I mean, he got the team to the NLCS last year. He did bring in Manaea. He did bring in a lot of bullpen arms that worked out. I mean, for the time being, we may not believe that these guys are sustainable, but until they're bad, until the pitching staff is bad, like, we haven't seen the starting pitching staff be terrible. We just see that they can't go 5-6 innings. Like, Clay Holmes, He's worked out.
Yeah.
He just can't go deep into the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a B plus is a little high for me. I wouldn't do it, but you know,
my question is, what has he done to earn a C? Like, he's only got you to the NLCS. He's only put you in second place in the NL East right now.
Understood. No, I'm not trying to be unfair to David. I'm saying this, but I'm gonna flip it back to you in the form of a question. What's he done to earn a B plus? And before you answer, and by the way, I think that you could be right. I'm not saying that it's a crazy answer. I'm definitely down to have the discussion. But if you look at the components last year that really led the Mets to Vientos, went bonkers in October, obviously drafted before he got here. You look at Lindor, finished second in the MVP way before he got here. You know, Pete obviously didn't have a great season, but home run off Devin Williams, 3-4 home runs in the postseason before he got. Outside of Manaea, now Winker had a couple of moments, but really, I feel like most of the success from the Mets last year, Diaz, came from people who were here before he got here. That's why I can't go B+. I'd go a little less than that. That's my philosophy or thought behind it.
I know he's going dumpster diving. But like Jose Iglesias was a key piece of this team.
Who, now, you know what? That's a good call.
Who brought him in?
That's a great call.
Joey Wendell.
I forgot about him.
And here's another thing, too, is Joey Wendell, like you said, he sucked. Like, he was terrible.
But he got rid of him.
They got rid of him. If this is another GM, we might have to eat that out a month or two more.
No, I think it's a different owner. I think that's all Cohen.
I think it's Stearns.
The Wilpons aren't swallowing $2 million on some scrub.
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, Stearns is like, hey, dude, I'm going to take a risk on this guy. He's not working out. Let's move to the next. They did that with bullpen arms. They do that with offensive players, defensive players. He has a specific model, and if he's not getting what he wants, he's moving forward and saying, hey, we're moving on. I mean, listen, Mark Vientos didn't get an opportunity with the previous GM. Mm. Mark Vientos got called up and stuck here because of David Stearns.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's a lot of nuance in some of that. Some of the things you say are true. The Iglesias, I just forgot about him for a second. He was awesome last year. Didn't he have the highest batting average in the history of the Mets at home? He did. Hit over 400 in Queens.
He also had the first opening, first hit song in City Field history.
No, he was a money pickup. And by the way, you know, Stearns had the foresight. It wasn't like it was such an easy call. He signed him to a minor league deal. Like, he started in Syracuse. And, you know, to be able to convince him, as the story went, like, hey, you're our first call-up if certain things don't go right. So he had to frame that properly, and he did. So I'm not trying to discredit him there. Again, I would go a little lower than B-, but either way, a little lower than B+, I should say. I would go about B-, C+, and Hoff's in the B+ mode, but that's fine. What I'm saying, I think what Hoff is definitely saying as well, now you better be an A, because if you come with a C here, Mets aren't winning squat, and if the Yankees come with a C in terms of cash, what he does the next 10 days, Yanks aren't winning squat. You know, both teams are good, neither team is great, but both teams also have a chance to raise the ceiling significantly in the next 10 days. Let me get Mike on Staten Island. Mikey, BT and Sal, what's going on?
So much, B. How are you?
I'm good, Mike.
First time I'm calling you.
Nice.
I can never get through.
All right.
I don't even give Stearns a C. But give him a D.
Oh, D. Okay.
Now they have the pitching, the pitching, whatever you call it. You know, the pitching squad. They turned around Severino's career, Quintana's career, and he doesn't even think about re-signing these guys. And you can't really say Severino's having a bad year because he's pitching in a minor league ballpark. That's where his ERA is, like 7.
Oh, yeah, his splits
but
are disastrous.
That minor league ballpark, he's untouchable.
I agree. I think he's very – if the Mets get him again, I would say I'm getting on the air saying it's a good move. It's good.
I think they should. I think they should never let him go. And then, like, Quintana walked for nothing, and look what he's doing with the Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I'm guarding against, Mike, and thanks for the call, like, now this was not him, but, like, it cannot be a situation where it's of the level of a Ruff and Vogelbach. It just can't be that. Not now. Not year one of Soto. Not possibly, although, you know, who knows, but possibly the end of the Pete Alonso era here. Not when Lindor's still at his prime. Not when it's year two on Manaea on a 2-year deal. I don't know. Was there an option on the Manaea deal? I thought it was straight two. I could be off. Either way, it's 2 years. You know, it's year two now. And, you know, Manaea's not going to be here forever. And it's just like, now is a time to pounce. There's a time when giving up prospects, taking on money is irresponsible. Like, it's just cavalier. It's too early. You're not really ready to win. Mets are ready to win. It's three? So it's two plus one, though.
No.
Straight three?
So now he's got 3 years. He opted out and they re-signed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was a 2 year deal last year. Last year was a 2 year deal, opt out. He opted out. They
opt out after one.
Right. And now he signed a 3 year deal.
And so meaning it expires in 2027?
2027 is the last year of his deal. So he's a free agent 2028.
Okay. There you go. But still, I mean, that gives you, a little more runway there with him. But the point is, everything else I said stands true. I mean, you've got to go. This has got to be like full court press time. Like, you know, hey, we're not up 15 points in the fourth quarter. We're looking to steal and apply some pressure. We're going for it. And the same with the Yankees. Aaron Judge is not 27. Just not. Well, testy. Surprised he didn't get thrown out of the game last night. No, but that was interesting with John Boy. But I got to throw some Met stuff on the table. Yankee fans, I see you. The lines are obviously juiced up. We'll get back to you. So much respect for what's happened with Alvarez here. It's a small sample. It is early. But it is impossible not to acknowledge that the instincts of the Mets were right. The attitude and the proactive buy-in nature of Alvarez was right. And now you very well might have somebody that was, in terms of value or even belief or both, was depreciating. I don't know. I'm being overly dramatic here, but I was going to say by the day, but from a Met fan perspective, let's face it, from the number one prospect in baseball, you know, mashing 25 home runs, it's been a long, strange trip. What a long, strange trip it's been. 2 years. I mean, really hurt, not playing well. So now, while I think the Mets absolutely still need to make moves, they got to get a bat. And I think we're talking about the same thing so many times because nothing's changed yet. But what has changed is, you know, now maybe if this is the early signs of Alvarez becoming the player, or at least somewhat of the player they thought that they had, and he showed glimpses of early, maybe they don't have to go absolutely bonkers and give up a piece they don't want to give up to get, you know, maybe like a Buxton or whatever they might be, a third baseman if they're even going to do that, although Beatty's playing better as well. It's just good stuff. You love to see young kids, you know, battle. And there is no greater sport and there is no lonelier feeling than in baseball. When you just don't do well, you can't hide. You know, all right, offensive lineman misses an assignment. Oh, yeah, he's going to get blasted in film session. But, yeah, if you coached football or played football, it's identifiable to you on TV probably immediately. But it's just not as glaring as if you let, you know, fastball go down the middle. Or you pop up a fastball with the bases juiced, or you're 1-for-18, because it's you on the TV screen. It's the pitcher, and it's you. And again, even a great basketball player having a rough night. Sure, when he shoots, he's isolated, but it kind of blends in with the other nine guys on the court to an extent. And, you know, it takes a special mindset. And I guess I forgot this because it's been so long since I played, and I didn't have this mindset. I wish I did. Not that it would have mattered. I wasn't good enough anyway. But it takes a special mindset to deal with failure in this sport. There is nothing like it. And honestly, I think being around kids, coaching, I think it's reminded me of that because it had been so long since I played. Damn, baseball's hard, man. It's hard. We just want to create this linear path. All right, what? You got drafted in the first round like Volpe? Come on, be a star. All right, Alvarez, come on. 2-3 years ago, you were the number one prospect in baseball. Let's go. What are you waiting for? Become Gary Carter. What's the problem? Well, the problem is that there's a lot of twists and turns in the development of baseball players, young ones. So, awesome job by him. It's good. It's a good win by the Mets. You know, and like the Yankees win, too, as I said to start the show, like you could easily frame it as, you know, one of two ways. Loaisiga stunk. Volpe, you know, throws another one in the dirt. Or, hey, Ben Rice, you know, Schlittler, and I choose to do a little bit of both, certainly enjoying the win, but also understanding it could have been a very different discussion today. And by the way, same for the Mets, which is what makes this a very, I don't know. Very interesting navigation for both of these teams until we get to the deadline here. You pumped about the win. Got a chance to, you know, win the series today. And you should. You're at home. The Angels aren't good. And they're not as bad as they used to be, but they're not good. But you can come on the air or you can, you know, call us up and say, you know, all right, 0 for 4 for, what is Lindor? I think it's now 0 for 29, whatever it is. You know, 0 for 30. Thank you. Dove, on top of it. Dovey. Oh, Hoff, there you go. I was going to say, is that a Dove production? That's a Hoff production. Wait, doing the Rico until 5 o'clock in the morning. It's right at the tip of his tongue. 0 for 30. And, but again, conversely, great win, awesome stuff. 5 hits, 3 runs. And this is not to minimize the, you win or you lose. But I'm listening. I had to go pick something up. Ice. I'll tell you why later. The first 4 innings, no hits, you know, and then they bust out a little bit here. Nimmo with a big hit. And if not for the 3 runs in the 5th inning, you know, it's a bunch of zeros there. So how do you process the win? Well, I process it as a win. But really, to me, the story so far for the Mets is the return and the early signs that Alvarez 2.0 is going to contribute down the stretch and hit with some pop. And listen, if I'm the Mets, obviously, you know, you got to sit him once in a while because he's a catcher, and Torrens is obviously a capable backup, as we know. I'm just not going to mess with his mechanics a whole lot. Like, I don't mean defensively. That they had to tighten that up. When he's in the box, listen, he's going to swing and miss a lot. He's not going to be, I don't think he'll ever be a high average. Like, I don't ever see him as a 290. I don't even see him as a 280 guy. But when he connects, he launches the baseball. Let him swing from the heels. Bat him 7th, 6th, wherever you put him. And let him provide some thump that seems to be ready to come for the next couple of months. Good job by the kid. You got to respect that. All right, let's get back to the calls here. 888-808-1019. Let me get Rich in Melbourne, Florida on the Free Odyssey app. What's going on, Rich?
BT, what's up? Great show. Great win last night.
No doubt. Thank you, Rich. What's up?
That was like pump up the extra oxygen. You know what I'm saying? We really needed that win.
Yeah.
Listen, man, Austin was kind of killing us, too. I mean, he's flying under the radar. He's not producing, not hitting the ball that hard. Even his defense is affecting him. He's not calling a good game. He's not talking to a pitcher when he's supposed to go.
One second. I just interrupt because I don't just want to throw things out there if I don't really agree. I mean, where's the evidence he's not calling a good game? I mean, Austin Wells frames the ball incredibly well.
I'm going to give you a sample. I forgot the pitcher. I believe the pitcher from Sunday or Monday.
All right.
After he gives up back-to-back hits, he don't go out and talk to the pitcher to calm him down. You know what I'm saying? He just stays back there, look at the dugout, waiting for instructions. You know what I'm saying?
Those
are little things. Those are little things that pitchers need when the pressure is being built up and you see the Toronto catcher does that all the time when the pitcher's put up a few men on base. He goes, calm them down.
Well, Kirk,
let's get back on track.
But I've seen Wells go out there. I think in nitpicking, honestly, I do.
Yeah, but his bat. I'm not talking about really his defense. I just talk about his bat is not doing absolutely nothing for this team. And that bottom of that lineup for the Yankees, they got to get something done. Yeah. I got one more question for you.
Go ahead.
Do you expect to see a different team August 1st?
Yes, no question. Oh yeah. Do you?
I hope so. I got my fingers crossed because one more question. How you feel about if they could make a trade for Perez from the Royals?
I mean, they're not trading Salvi Perez. Salvi Perez? I mean, Garcia might be coming here, but no. There's no way the Royals are trading that guy. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a World Series champion. No, they're not. I'm not saying I wouldn't take him. No, they're not going to do that. I mean, yeah, Austin Wells is a little perplexing, you know, but again, it's really how you view it. We're sitting here right now, and he's hitting .214. Unacceptable. His OPS is barely over 700. Unacceptable. But we're also talking about a catcher in his mid-20s who's on pace, and I'm looking at it, projected 22 home runs, nearly 90 RBIs. You know? And I know he batted fourth a lot last year, and that actually kind of propelled the Yankees' offense. It coincided with him being put there, which proved to be a pretty good move. But he's not batting fourth now. He's not batting third. You know, not usually, not always even batting fifth. I mean, if Austin Wells is your sixth hitter even if he's a seven hitter, you know, making peanuts in terms of a contract, lefty hitter in his mid-20s who's pretty good defensively and is going to hit 20-plus home runs and 80-plus RBIs, who the hell's going to complain about that if the other components are doing their job? Ari in Lakewood, BT and Sal. What up, Ari?
I want to know when Luis Gil is going to come back. And if you move, and maybe if you move Chisholm to a third, and maybe Ben Rice could play a little third.
They just moved him from third.
You think Ben Rice could play third?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really want to find out. Do you?
Yeah, it's better than Peraza.
That's true. Tough to argue with you there. I don't know. Like, the one thing that I do find interesting, you know, you shouldn't have to reinvent things when you have a $300 million payroll. Can Ben Rice play third base? I don't know, but I know he didn't play third base in high school or at Dartmouth or in the minor leagues. So why the hell is he going to play third base now in a pennant race? I'm not even sure if he can catch. And that's actually what he did when he was a little bit younger. I think he's the first baseman. Well, depends what happens with, you know, it depends what happens with Bellinger. See, the tricky thing here is Bellinger's going to get big money. He's going to opt out. He's going to get big money. Now, we can sit here and say, well, the Yankees don't always go all in. And that's true, even though they have a very high payroll. If you let that guy walk out, you are absolutely out of your mind nuts. Bellinger's the best all-around pure baseball player on the team. Not even close. Nobody's even close to him. Now, Judge is the best player in baseball. Bellinger is the best all-around baseball player on the team. Like, if he was right-handed, I would put him at third base. Who did I hear? Was it Moose? It was Moose. What day was it? I was driving somewhere. It was either Saturday or Sunday, obviously. And somebody called up Moose, and like, they weren't joking. They're like, what about Bellinger at third base? I give points to Moose for handling it well. I understand, like, I guess to an extent, like, if he can play anywhere, let's see if he can really, truly play anywhere. But, I mean, the fact that somebody would feel compelled to call and ask if a lefty could play third base in a pennant race tells you things are a little wacky, you know? But, like, Goldschmidt's gone next year. Bellinger's going to get big money. I think he loves being a Yankee, and I think the Yankees will pay him. You know, he's not getting 8-9 years. I think he stays. I think he loves it. Perfect fit. He almost feels to me like a more athletic Paul O'Neill. Like, he just fits. He fits like a glove. So if Bellinger stays, well, now, and this is where it gets a little complicated, but I'll try to take you through some dominoes here. So let's say Goldie out. I mean, that's almost 100%. Let's say Belly in with an extension. Let's say Spencer Jones and Ben Rice not traded. Okay? And I don't think they're trading Jones. I mean, you could trade Rice. You're going to have to give up something to get somebody good. So they could trade Rice. Now, if that's the case, again, saying that they're both here. The young kid, Spencer Jones here, Ben Rice stays, not dealt, Bellinger extended. Well, where is Ben Rice playing? It's the same problem next year. Now, the reason I bring in Bellinger, if Bellinger walks, well, now you have your first baseman. Clearly, it would be Ben Rice. And then you'd have an outfield of Judge and Dominguez and Jones or Grisham if you keep it, whatever. I don't love that. There's too many uncertainties there, but this is why it's just so hard to read what they're doing and where they're going. It's a logjam in a lot of spots. But, man, Bellinger, how do you not love watching this guy play baseball? BT and Sal show here on The Fan, brought to you by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. Talked about those Mets as well. Alvarez comes back, at least the early sample, a different player. Good for him. 888-808-1019. Let's get to it. Milton's in Brooklyn. Milt, where you been, Milt?
Hey, what's going on, brother? Like, hey, always, man. Great show. All right, so I got, you know, real quick, this thing that you keep saying that the Yankees are not going to win the World Series, you don't think they can win the World Series.
I don't.
Okay, the problem with that is, if you're going to say that, you're going to have to name the top three teams that can. Because I don't want to hear you celebrating if they do, but you also get to say, I told you so.
I want to hear the teams that you think will win. All right, Mel. We got to get past one thing here. We're going to have a conversation. You know I love you. But I know you bring it, so we're good. Like, you guys got to get out of the habit of telling us how to feel. I mean, honestly, well, if you say this, then you can't. Says who? I can do whatever I want.
Okay, but you have to also play the other side, because I want to be able to tell you that you were wrong on the teams that you say can win.
Okay, there we go. There we go.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, because you're saying you don't think the Yankees can win, so who can?
I don't. Well, I think I've said this for a month. I think Toronto's better. I think the Toronto.
Okay, so now I know. Okay, now I know. So when Toronto doesn't win, when they get eliminated in the first round, and this is all just because they're hot right now,
okay.
I get to say you were wrong. That's why I just want to be able to come back at you, because I don't want you to have that Evan Roberts thing where he plays both sides and never be wrong. And
I don't think Evan does that.
Yes, he does. Evan Roberts is the legend of that. What are you talking? He smashes his teams. They're not going to win. I already know they're not. But when they do, he gets to celebrate. So he's never wrong. Don't do that. That's what I'm just hoping that you don't fall for that.
All right. I mean, yeah, okay. So you're creating rules here. We won't do it, Milton. Yeah, I get it, you know. I get it, because trust me, I grew up listening to the station, and you are emotionally invested in what's said on the station. That's the essence of the station. So when, even if you like somebody, but especially if you don't, like either you don't like the teams they grew up rooting for, you don't like their style, it you get a little pleasure, that pound of flesh. BT, I told you were wrong. I told you. And it makes you feel good. That's fine. I mean, hey, I'm going to break a little news here. I can't tell you guys how to hear stuff, but I promise you, number one, I've been wrong a lot. Number two, I'll own it. What else are you looking for? Ooh, I want to be able to call you up and say that you were wrong. God, I'll probably beat you to it, man. And happily so. I don't think Evan straddles. Now, sometimes when he goes into, like, the IBO, the independent stuff, I don't know, maybe he's playing the fence there. I don't know. I've heard Evan say he's wrong a lot. I really have. I got to defend Evan there. I mean, Jesus. Now, maybe not everybody in the history of the station enjoyed saying that they were wrong. Maybe there were a few legendary voices that didn't like doing that. Hey, I had no problem doing it. Shouldn't be. No way. Last night was just like too many other nights this year. Just sloppy and very dispiriting and too many excuses post-game. Get back to these calls. Mets, good win. See, to me, I mean, I can't prove this, but I almost feel like, let's say the Mets come out last night and they blast the Angels 9-1. And like Senga's dominant, and he was terrible. But I'm saying in this alternate universe that I'm about to present to you for a moment to prove a point, a possible point. They win 9-1, Senga deals, you know, go 6, he's efficient, bullpen lockdown, you know, maybe Lindor busts out. He has been a mess. You know, Soto with a couple of knocks, bottom third of the order gets loose, and the Mets just pummel a bad team. Like, I almost think that the way they won last night would be more of a springboard to galvanize this team than coming out and just rolling a team that's probably fairly disinterested and 3,000 miles away from their home last night. I think that's the kind of win, maybe, because other things still need to happen. Trade deadline, of course, we hit that yesterday. But other things need to happen. I'm fully aware of that, and I'll tell you what in a minute. And I want to get into something that Stern said, but I just think that that's a unifying kind of win. I mean, you start to hear the murmurs, the boos, and, you know, the top of the order doing nothing, and Senga was just a mess, and, you know, there's just things that were, again, creeping into the picture that was kind of making it a little ugly out there in Queens. And then, yeah, what do you know? I thought Beatty's play where he jumped up and he snared that ball and played the plate. Alvarez, good tag, boom. I thought that was kind of hidden in some of the offense that happened later in the game. So a good win, there's no doubt. And we'll see what this does for the Mets here. But You know, David Stearns, who, and we'll play this for you in a minute, I think that I don't love what I heard from him, but I also understand he's not going to divulge state secrets here. Like, you know, I know we want more. And Cashman actually did say last week, he's like, basically, we're going for it. I mean, full bore, gung-ho, we are taking a massive swing. It's pretty much what he said, where Stearns was very close to the vest and, you know, didn't conceal a whole lot. I mean, he would barely even grant you center field. He said, yeah, the production, not quite what you want, but then he talked about the defense and some other stuff here. So I don't think there's no way that David Stearns can look at this team, right, can look at this team and not understand there is a massive need, as I've said for a long time, for a bat. The bullpen stuff is obvious, but I want to play this for you, and then I want to tell you one mistake that Stearns has to avoid. Go ahead, guys.
David, you mentioned the offense in center field, but overall the depth of the lineup hasn't probably been as productive as you'd hoped over the last month or so. Is that something that you think can be fixed internally, or is that something that needs to be addressed as well?
So I might push back on that a little bit. I actually think the depth of our lineup over the last couple of weeks has been pretty good. We're turning the lineup over pretty nicely, I think. We have guys at the bottom of our lineup who are extending at bats, seeing pitches. I think the fair critique is we haven't scored runs. We've taken pretty good bats. We're getting guys on base, and we haven't scored runs. And that goes back to a theme that we've talked about a lot here, which is getting those hits and executing with runners in scoring position, which has been a challenge for us all year. I don't have the answer for that. I wish I did. We'd have solved it. But I actually think the length of our lineup has been pretty good over the last, say, 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay, so this leads me to push it forward and the thing that Stearns has to avoid. And based on what he's saying, again, I know he's not going to divulge too much, so I'm not going to hang literally on every word, obviously. But if that's most of what he's believing, like if he's just not playing coy, whatever, I think he's in for a massive, massive mistake here. Because when you talk about the bottom of the lineup and the Taylors, you know, and Beatty's definitely shown some signs, and Alvarez is back, and he's certainly a guy, young player, that could get hot and could do some real damage. We've seen it. 25 home runs already 1 year. Acuna, you know, Winker eventually is going to be back. Marte, I guess he's not a very fast healer. But, see, I just think it is way too risky for David Stearns to believe what he just told you right there. It's one thing to say it. That's okay. But to believe it, like David Stearns gets in his car last night, leaves Citi Field, drives, you know, I'm sure to a nice little mansion at this point, wherever he's living, probably out east. And probably next to Boomer. And he, you know, he's thinking and he's believing what he said. I think that the Mets are dead. Then the Mets will not win. They will not, even with two good bullpen arms, the offense is not good enough. You cannot rely on, like, so many variables to come to fruition and pop. Like, it's one thing if you've got a lineup that's just locked and loaded and there's, like, one spot, one young player, and you're going to trust him because you believe in him enough. And even if he doesn't hit it up, there's enough defense and there's enough other offense around him to shield him. There is not enough offense around these guys to shield them. I mean, when Lindor doesn't hit, and he has not hit for a minute, I mean, at this point, you have to, is it the toe? I mean, I kind of pushed that aside pretty fast, but it's been so long, and it's really kind of connected to when he broke his toe. I mean, it's hard not to be fair to the guy. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. If you hurt, you shouldn't play. If you hurt to that extent. But, you know, Soto has not had an amazingly vintage season. He's had a phenomenal month. That's it. McNeil, resurgent. But you just never know what version you're getting from McNeil. Same with Nimmo. Come on, we've talked about this forever. If I say to you, the Mets' mission right now, and it is, this is rhetorically stated, is the Mets' mission, or asked, is the Mets' mission this year to win a World Series? And the answer is yes. Payroll, Soto, Lindor prime, Manaea contract status, Senga contract status, Diaz contract status, Nimmo age contract status, all the things we know. is this a World Series lineup? The answer is unequivocally no. You need to yell about that. It's not good enough. So to me, if Stearns really believes that, he is setting himself up to be less than when it matters. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the fence. Sal is off. He's off all week. Let's get back to the calls here. Obviously, the Yankee stuff, first hour. Now the Mets stuff is on the table. Jay's in Neptune on the fan. What's cooking, Jay?
Hey, listen, BT, thanks for taking the call. Love the show.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jay.
I'm a lifelong Yankee fan.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up, Phil Rizzuto was my neighbor.
Wow. Wow, I miss him. I loved him. Yep.
I got tons of stories I could say, but
sure.
for the purpose of time here, I'm a huge radio junkie, always have been since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And while I watch Yes and in the Yankee game, I also in the background have, you know, the radio on. And the only one that's telling the scoop on this whole Yankee team, that's why I turn off Boone, is Susan Wolman. She was saying last night from the get-go, and I can't tell you how many times she's enumerated it,
yep,
that the Yankee left side of the infield has been an issue from day one. And I mean, she pounded it last night. And, you know, that's why I love her, because she tells it like it is. I can't listen to Boone. That's about all I've had to say. You're right on it. You hit the nail on the head, and it has just infuriated me. Thanks for taking the call.
No, Jay, you got it, buddy. Yeah, funny, I had the broadcast on a little bit as well. I was in the basement. I was trying to do some stuff, and my TV wouldn't work. One of the TVs in the basement, and I'm like, and where I was, whatever. So I listened to the game for a while when I was doing what I was doing, and that's no surprise. Susan's always going to keep it real. That's why we love having her on the show. Maybe we'll get Susan on this week, huh? Maybe we'll reach out to Susan. There you go. It's been a little bit. I was texting her about 2 weeks ago about something. She's a straight shooter. You know, when you've been in that job for a long time, like Sterling last year, he's basically saying the runners are drunk. I mean, the lack of tolerance and acceptance for just substandard play, why are you going to lie? Why are you going to try to deceive us? Come on, Susan's got no reason to do that, you know? What, are the Yankees going to fire her if she's too honest? Stop. So I get the same thing from her that you got. And she wears it. She lives it. Like, you could tell when Dave's calling a home run or a double, you know, you hear the groans and they're audible, like, oh, man. You know, you can just tell that she's not happy. She's a Yankee fan, you know? She knows the left side's a disaster right now. There's no doubt about it. Let me get Scott down to Port St. Lucie. Scott, what's going on, bud?
What's up, BT? Big fan.
I'm good. Thank you. What's happening, man?
Real quick, with the Yankees, I'm a big Mets fan, but for years the Mets always hyped their prospects and they never amounted to anything. Now I feel like the Yankees are doing that. I mean, you saw from the beginning, you got Frazier, you got Gary Sanchez, you got...
we know them all. I know.
And you know what? For years, you remember the year when DeGrom was becoming a free agent? The
yes.
Mets were trying to make a trade with the Yankees. And the Yankees would not take DeGrom for, like, Andujar and Torres. And it's just, I think if the old man was alive, this would not be happening.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little tired, quite frankly, just of the old man references. I get it, Scott.
I know.
What I'm saying.
It's a new guy. I totally understand.
I mean, it's not like George died last year, Scott. That's all I'm saying. And I get it. It's a point of reference. I'm not coming at you at all. I appreciate what you're saying because you're right. I mean, if George was, you know, still young and virile and, you know, nutty George when he wasn't suspended, hey, there's a lot of things that go down that wouldn't be going down. That's obvious. But, you know, it's 2025. He didn't die last year. Been a long time, unfortunately. So, a little desensitized to some of the stuff, but that doesn't mean that we have to accept it forever. And last night was a breaking point for me. You know, if you listen to the show, if you follow me on social media, I'm definitely supportive of Aaron Boone, and I still am, but don't lie to us. Let it rip once in a while. And I thought last night was too far in a direction that is not emblematic or reflective of what's going on right now with his team's defense. Specifically, the left side. Even the other night with Vivas, take it up from third. Got to pull him out. Bench him. That's what I would do. And I just don't want to hear some of the stuff anymore. I just don't want to. Let me get Butch down in Myrtle Beach. Hey, Butch, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, BT?
All good. What you got?
Question for you. Do you think David Stearns is kind of not showing his cards? You know he has to increase the lineup and get more productivity. But do you think he's not trying to sound too desperate going into the trade deadline?
I think there's always an element of that. Absolutely. Now, I don't really think that it does much. Listen, Butch, business 101. The last time to strike a deal is when everybody knows that you got to strike a deal. You have zero leverage. It evaporates immediately. So I understand that. That's a good question. Of course, I think he's playing possum a little bit, but I don't think it has any effect because everybody in we're sitting here on the radio telling you for months what the Yankees need, what the Mets need, what this team might do, which team might trade, which team might sell. So you don't think actual people who do it for a living understand the holes on the Mets roster and understand where they are payroll-wise and, you know, trying to build off last year and their quest for a championship, first time since 86? Of course. It's not breaking news. Wow. The Mets need some bullpen arms. Oh, my God. What a stunner. I will tell you one thing. And this is not a knock. This is just an it's just a very truthful observation. So I'm listening to Stearns last night. Remember yesterday we discussed what kind of grade we would give him. I don't even know how it came up, but some of the callers were less kind than me. Like, I think it's unfair because a lot of the people that point to the Mets' success with Stearns, they're like, well, you know, he didn't get Soto, that was Cohen. Well, he didn't get Lindor, that was Cohen. Well, he didn't get Pete, Risai, I was Cohen and Boris, whatever. I get it, but he did bring in Minaya, and without Minaya, not a playoff team a year ago, and he did bring in Iglesias on a minor league deal, and without Iglesias, you're not a playoff team that last year. So, got to be fair. So my grade's a little bit higher, but I could already see it coming. Not if, because it's more when, because it's just going to happen. When that first Met drought happens, and I don't mean like the old Mets, like where there's 9 years of futility. I don't mean that. But when it's just less than what people expect, the way David Stearns speaks and the way he presents things is going to drive people nuts. You know, I even heard the guys laughing about it this morning. Jerry was playing some stuff in the update. Like, you know, kind of booing with the Lane stuff. I forget the exact verbiage, but it's like, dude. You know, yeah. I don't think you're ever going to get like that rawness. And I don't mean like a maniac. That's certainly not his style. That rawness, that realness, that presentation. You know, when as a fan you want to pound the flesh. And we've all been there with our teams. And eventually you'll be there again as a Met fan. Just like I'll be there as a Yankee fan. I'm a little bit there today, you know. But he's not that delivery is, I think, going to piss you off more when it's lean. We'll see. All right, let me get Steve up in Connecticut on the fan. BT and Sal, what's going on, Steve?
Hey, BT, what's up, brother?
I'm good, dude. What's happening?
Good. My point's on Volpe, but real quick, I'm boom. This is obviously, we've been saying it forever. It's what the Yanks signed up for when they let Joe go. So coddle the players, pump them up. Apologize for him. So, and when stuff gets rough, that's when it really irritates us.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny. Me and my kids will watch a post game only to see who Boone is, you know, is playing up to tonight, who he's covering up. Guy goes 0 for 4, 4 Ks. And he had a good approach, actually. So I don't know why we watch it. It just irritates us more.
Well, but here's the one thing, though. You got to get that. Like, you just talk to us. You know, we know what we're watching. And that's one of my themes today. The accountability's got to be more transparent. But think about this, Steve. You mentioned Girardi, all right? I mean, Joe's doing some TV. It's not like Joe's so amazing where there's three or four teams knocking down his door, you know?
Right. No, I'm not.
So
saying
it's all,
Joe
I just say that. I just say that, Steve. I just say that. It's always easy to romanticize what was, and I was a Girardi fan, not over the top, insane, crazy fan, but certainly a supporter and the old school nature that kind of vibes with how I am, but. The guy was far from perfect. That's all I'm saying. Let's not misremember what bothered us about him.
I know. Yeah. With Volpe, I feel like in the beginning, I was like, I feel like he's a victim of expectations, pumped up expectations. But now, I mean, it's been 3 years now. And the things he does well, BT, I think you'd agree. Like, he goes yard. And when he does, I don't get that pumped up. I'm like, all right, whatever. Because I know the next three at-bats, he's swinging from his heels again.
Yeah.
I think what we think he should be is shorten the swing a bit, gap the bat, line drives, uses wheels, but he's never on base, strikes out a ton. And what he does well, what he does do well is contrary to, I think, his sustainable success.
I think that's an outstanding point. I think that's, you nailed a lot there, Steve. You're right. It's funny, when he goes yard, I'm happy for him because I'm rooting for him. But from a conviction perspective, I never feel like, all right, here we go. Now you give me a couple of doubles, you go 3 for 5, you know, whistle a few the other way in the right center gap, steal a couple of bases, you know, catch it. That's what excites me about Volpe, because that's the player he should be. You know, if you ask me, you know, and it is year three, so like by year five or, year, you know, whatever the ceiling is, and that's, I don't know what it is. I don't. Anthony Volpe should be, I would say, about a 270-ish hit, you know, low 270s, you know, maybe a year or two sniff 280 with 35 doubles, and he's going to actually get there this year, 40 steals, and an OPS of about, you know, 750, 760, catch it, run, 40 swipes. And if you're on base that much, if you're hitting 270, you're going to get 40 steals. So, I you really nailed it there, Steve. The home runs, again, especially if it's, you know, in a meaningful spot for in the game, I'm like, hey, go. And I'm just happy for him. So I really am sincerely rooting for him. But it doesn't do anything to make me feel good about, all right, here we go. It's the beginning of a hot streak. Here we go. He's turning the corner. Very interesting observation. I feel you on that.